This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:08 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, Sharmila and Sharad. And first up today, a recent story has us wondering, are Malaysian cities actually encouraging of bicycle use?
So this has its roots in a story that's being reported. Basically, last Saturday, two cyclists were given a 250 ringgit fine each by the PJ City Council, MBPJ, for parking illegally across the Taman Bahagia LRT station. So they had to pay the fine to recover their bicycles after the bicycles were impounded. Now, according to them, they were forced to park at the guard railing beside the public car park, because the bicycle parking spots at the train station were fully occupied by motorcycles. So this incident has raised questions and complaints towards MBPJ, with people saying that these actions basically go against the aspirations of the city to become a green city and to improve connectivity.
So one of the cyclists, Justin Lee, who's initiated a Bike Commute Malaysia kind of program and is an architectural design lecturer, said that he was shocked to learn that his bicycle that was parked at Jalan SS2/3 went missing. He said that his bicycle was nowhere to be seen after he left the train station about 10 p.m. Short and long of it is that he finally found, I was told, where his bicycle was, and trying to recover it, there was an addition of a fine to him. So the question, I think he's aggrieved because of this series of misadventures that seem to put him at a disadvantage.
So he thought his bike had been stolen or lost, and so in fact put up posters and so on, only to later find out that it had in fact been impounded.
So a lot of this, I think, makes it feel as if we are operating in a world in which people simply aren't used to bicycles, or aren't used to bicycles being parked, or you know, what have you, and there being a lot of grey area in terms of how that then operates. Because if you come back and your bicycle is nowhere to be found, I think that is kind of a telling story, right? It makes me think of all the times that people have had their cars towed away. Except in those cases, because we are so car-centric, you have a rough idea of, okay, well, if my car's not here, if it hasn't been stolen, then, you know, this is where I should go. I roughly know how much I'm going to pay. But all of this felt like it was very new. And it applied to people who generally rely on their bicycles as an important element of their daily commute, which is part of why I think it raised the question of, okay, so you're telling people we should move towards public transport. In order to do that, I need to have a micro-mobility vehicle, in this case, my bicycle. I then need to be able to put it somewhere. If that is taken up by something else, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah, because the argument, of course, could be made that the bicycles were in fact parked illegally. But of course, as this story reveals, there was no other space for them to be able to park, because the bicycle spots are essentially being taken over.
So there's a hierarchy, it seems, isn't it, of who's important in the scheme of things, in the public transport scheme of things. Bicycles at this point in time, unlike some cities, not that many cities, but unlike some cities, bicycles are low priority. And the people who ride them often are invisible, are not seen, are not regarded in the planning and design of these transport hubs, in connectivity issues and so on and so forth, right? So I think the story, again, it's about saying, well, on one hand, there's all this nice talk about aspirations, aspirational talk about, a green city. But the reality on the ground is that there is no consideration for somebody who wants to, in fact, walk in that, or rather work towards that goal.
So that's what we're going to be focusing on today. Essentially, do we have a space, or are our city spaces areas that bicycles can actually B that cyclists can actually use. And we want to know, do you cycle in the city? Do you think that our public spaces are welcoming towards cyclists? That number to call is 7733 2900. You can send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be speaking with Khalif Ismail, who is the marketing specialist from Specialized Bicycles. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Begin Free Malaysia. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It is 5:14. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, Sharmila and Sharad. We're starting off our show today with, the question of whether or not our cities are friendly towards bicycles and cyclists after a number of recent cases suggest that maybe that's really not it. So we want to know, do you cycle in the city? Do you think that our public spaces are actually welcoming towards cyclists? You can call us 7733 2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now, we have Khalif Ismail, who's the marketing specialist from Specialized Bicycles. Khalif, thanks for speaking with us today.
Hey guys, it's all good.
So, this story about the bicycles being impounded by MBPJ has surfaced a number of conversations, including complaints about our goals to move towards a greener city and to adopt more micro-mobility measures. Do you think enough is being done to accommodate this, and for bicycles specifically?
Okay, so what I feel is that, I've been cycling for, 20-odd years right now, from a really, elite, racing cyclist, now becoming a bit more recreational. And I live in public cars, so I always go into town. But there are some intentions towards that, but having bicycle lanes and things like that. But it's not a whole ecosystem for the cyclists to actually want to use their bicycles as a commute, right? To commute to work. So that's a problem. And I think some parts of it is kind of there, but it's not really there entirely. So it's not a full ecosystem. So that kind of give us all these problems. Like sometimes when you go on a bicycle lane, the lane is not, it's obstructed by trucks or whatever. And then on the other side, when you get to a LRT station, you can't really park it properly because the bike stand or even the place to park your bike has been taken up by motorcycles or anything else, right?
Yeah, so the specific issue that's being brought up is how parking spots for bicycles are usually obstructed by motorcycles, that there are inadequate cycling facilities in cities and township areas. So let's break this down. Firstly, are there enough spaces to park bicycles? Have you experienced motorcyclists taking up those spaces?
I mean, to be honest, I only commute into town every now and then, places like PJ and stuff. I just personally feel it's not really safe for you to commute around there, especially you're on your bike and then there's a lot of heavy traffic and there's not enough bike lanes. And when you get to the point, like you said just now, it's very little bicycle park space. And then, it's pretty crazy to think these guys get their bicycles impounded, but the guys, motorcyclists who park their bikes there, what happened to them, right? They're okay to use that space to park their motorbikes or whatever. So it's not enough space. And I personally think also it's not enough people who commute to work on a bicycle for the government to be taking full-on action towards this right now.
So, Khalif, you already mentioned security, but I guess in terms of just the space that bicycles have to compete with, the roads, the other cars, the lorries and such. But what about the issue of security in terms of those parking facilities? Do you think, what have you experienced in terms of the security of your bike or your personal security in the spaces that are provided?
Yeah, so, maybe I talk a bit on that, right? I just came back from London and I traveled to Amsterdam and I used to study in London. And people, when they travel to work, they have a proper space to park their bikes. And then when they park it, they use, in the article, they mentioned that this guy is using a D-lock. D-lock is pretty strong lock, right? You can't really cut through it unless you use heavy machinery. So there are, and then also what happens in places like Europe, and so they have a proper system when it comes to insurance. So if anything goes wrong with your bikes, get stolen, there will be somebody to be covering that. So we don't have that, unfortunately. So if you park your bike, it's just basically you tie up to a pole or something and it's going to be exposed like that. So security is basically zero, really. The fact that they can come and cut the D-lock and just take up the bike and leave it somewhere else. That happens all the time. Bike gets stolen over here all the time as well.
You mentioned that you don't commute that frequently, but I'm sure in the community there are people who are. What can you tell us about some of the problems that commuters who rely on their bicycles face on a daily basis?
The first is getting to a certain point. Depends like where which area you live. If you know, if you're not in central KL, it makes it harder for you to actually commute to go to town. If you have your office in town or in places like PJ, you know, it's pretty much congested, right? Riding your bike and there's a lot of traffic and stuff. And on the other hand, there's no throughout, like the whole thing doesn't have an interlink proper bike lane for people to use it. If there is, I mean, I've seen some here in KL, but they're not well developed, so that you'll see like there's some like ending in like some weird junction. So it's not like, so the thing I find is that when they do the city planning, they need to integrate this a part of the city planning, right, throughout traffic lights and all that. So that's how it's gonna work properly. But if you're just doing it just for the sake of telling the other countries that I'm doing my part to be green, having bike lanes is just not really enough. So the whole ecosystem doesn't really work. So as soon as you cycle, you get there, where do you park your bike? And it comes to issue with security. And when you get to the office, what is going to happen there? Do you have shower for yourself? Not really. So the whole ecosystem is not really well developed and well thought through. It's just do one part just to showcase that we've done some bicycle lanes over here, and that's that.
So if we were to move towards making our city a more bicycle-friendly place, what are the gaps that we need to be tackling?
Yeah, I think, you've seen places like Amsterdam, there's a proper park where you store your bikes and then you can lock it and there's a proper security and then you can, you know, there's transition points from end to end. It makes it it's more enjoyable for people to commute. And I think the guys who, you know, the city planners need to get and discuss this with the cyclists who commute to work every day, right? They use this method of commuting and try to understand the journey, right? Even go on a bike and try to understand yourself, like, how does it feel to be on a bike to get to an office or somewhere in center, right? And the other thing is that there are not many of us cyclists that commute to work. To be honest, just the weather. I find that it's just the culture is not there. It's very little, small amount of people that commute to work. And probably that's probably the reason why it's not enough push behind it, because it's just not a big majority of them, you know, going to work on a bike, right? And we are not in that culture to be doing that, because I think, you know, due to the weather, due to the heat and traffic, so some people just try to avoid it. There's a lot of strong cyclists around here, but they're not going to cycle to work, but they will take Grab or drive their own cars or LRT, and there's that, right?
Caleb, I wonder if this is also a question of affluence. If you think back of, you know, pictures of Beijing in the 1970s or any other Asian country, bicycles were big. I mean, bicycles were something that a lot of people use. But affluence has changed the way we think about what is comfortable, what is doable in terms of moving around the city. Do you think that that we can't move back to a bicycle-centered city because we're really just too rich?
Yeah, I think people just get comfortable, you know. I tell you honestly, even for myself as a cyclist, I cycle like 100 km. I've done something crazy like 300 plus and stuff. But if you ask me to cycle for, you know, 3 to 5 km to get to a point to buy some groceries, I wouldn't do that, because it's just that the thing is that you will be in a different kind of attire. You're not in a sweat ready attire, right? Not, you know, anything that is comfortable. So if you're talking about going to work, like you guys going to the office and having to cycle there, try to do it 5 km and see how it feels. Right? It's not the most comfortable thing. And also going back to the culture back in the days, right? Like, you know, places like Amsterdam, whatever, because they put a full on good infrastructure for people to feel that, okay, it's safe. It's, you know, I'm confident to ride and my bike is not going to get stolen or whatever. And then it's comfortable, right? So it's the end, from the end, the start point to end, until you get to the office, it needs to be the whole ecosystem where the office will provide a shower or the office will provide your parking space for these people. Then it will become something like that. If you're sharing the road with, I actually can drive to work, then people are not going to use these infrastructures, right? Like in central London, nobody drive their car because it's too expensive, and they use underground tube. But underground tube is well developed, so people have the confidence of using the system, so they want to do that. But for us, it's just like, hey man, you know, might as well just get Grab to go to work, right? With all these challenges and risks that involve cycling to work, you know. By the way, I'm not against it, but I know a lot of people will kind of like feel like, you know, it's a bit of a hassle. It requires a lot of planning, and there's a lot of uncertainty when you're at work and you park your bike somewhere it's not safe. You keep thinking about that, right? And it's not comfortable. You know, you can't really focus on your job, and then, you know, and then you come back, but your bike went missing, and then it's going to take like 5 days to find it, and nobody's responsible for it. So it's more work for these guys. And when something like this happens, it kind of basically put people off, like, you know what, screw this, I'm not going to cycle to work, basically.
Fair enough, Khalif. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Easy. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You too. That was Khalif Ismail, marketing specialist from Specialized Bicycles, talking to us about really all the ways in which our cities are not exactly bike friendly. And that's what we've been talking about after some recent headlines surfaced with people who rely on their bicycles for their daily commute, having difficulty finding spaces to park their bicycles, firstly, because those parking spaces were taken up by motorcycles, and then subsequently getting their bikes taken away and impounded.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then having to not just pay the fine, but also the fee to get their bicycle back.
All of which makes it feel as if, you know, the whole culture of encouraging cycling maybe isn't there yet. And we want to know, do you cycle in the city? Do you think that our public spaces are in fact welcoming towards cyclists? You can call us 7733 2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. So we do have some messages on this.
So actually plenty of thoughts coming through. We have... Let's see. Lukman says, from my observation, cycling in Malaysia only works for recreational purposes and the last mile journey. And even for the last mile journey, that's only applicable for small folding bikes. Don't even try to suggest cycling to work. With our weather, it's only time. The only time it's acceptable to cycle to work is when only you work from home.
So I think that the weather is a real issue. I at one point tried, when we were in a different office, walking back and forth to work. And I found that ultimately the weather was prohibitive. And then also safety. I started getting very concerned about safety.
But, you know, the weather has been with us for millennia. I mean,
it is getting warmer, though.
Yeah, yes and no. But it's actually is what we consider acceptable in terms of sweating and stuff like that.
Yes, but also people used to live closer to where they work and they don't do that anymore. Mm. So I take your point, but then there's also where people live and how they work.
That's true.
And what they wear at work also makes a difference.
Because we've all heard, you know, grandfather stories about people walking 3 miles to school or 3 miles to whatever, right? I mean, there used to be a lot more walking. There was probably a lot of sweating and sweat patches on clothes. And perhaps, you know, in those days, it was just acceptable. I mean, we've gone so far from a time when the weather wasn't really a problem to now that the weather has become almost insurmountable in our discussions. I mean, it's almost like we wish we weren't equatorial. And I don't know if that frame of thinking allows us to be more imaginative in terms of what we think the city can be.
I don't know whether everybody thinks the same way. I will say, when I say weather and when I hear Lukman and the other people in the messages saying weather, what I imagine is not just the heat. It's the heat plus the amount of cars, plus the amount of bikes, plus contending with that on unsafe bike roads. I think that when we say weather, it's sort of a catch-all for a larger discomfort. Because
plus that it might pour sometimes.
Yes, that too. But to Sharat's point, that was always the case. So I think it's a combination of all those things. And then hugely important is the distance. Because it's one thing if you could get a bus that will get you up to a certain point and it's quite near, etc., etc. It's quite another thing if you are coming to work at, let's say you start work at 10, and so you have to cycle for half an hour from at 9:30 in, you know, long pants, long sleeve shirt. I think it's asking a lot. I do.
I agree. I mean, I was just putting it out as a what I think is kind of a mental barrier to the way we think about these issues. But you're absolutely right. I mean, in many ways, it's the bitumen on the road. I mean, just so much tar. We've cut down trees. I live in a very walkable neighborhood, but, you know, constant cutting of trees means that the shade is gone and we're in heat. And the solution, it seems always, is to build some metal structure, not to plant more trees, but to actually build, you know, something concrete or made of metal in order to recover the shade that trees had naturally provided us. So yes, we have made ourselves also increasingly uncomfortable with the choice, these kinds of choices.
Linia says, the road and other road users are totally hostile towards cyclists. The same goes for bicycle parking. Road and road users are hostile towards pedestrians as well. Our fuel subsidies don't encourage cycling either.
Well, on that note, we also have Andrew who says, Sharad.
Yes, Andrew.
Yes, I have never seen cars that park on bicycle lanes being ticketed or summoned. That surely does not contribute to a safe environment for cyclists. But speaking of hierarchy, I'm a pedestrian. We're the lowest on the food chain. Even cyclists don't respect pedestrian crossings.
Andrew, I feel for you because I too am a pedestrian and have often felt that I'm of little priority in the minds of planners. And it's not just that, you know, pedestrian walkways, but also the fact that a lot of them are uneven or they'll have holes in it and so on and so forth. But, you know, but yeah, cyclists, I feel a deep concern because of the potholes, because roads are not always maintained, and that's very dangerous.
We'll come back for more of this, but we are asking you, do you cycle in the city, and do you think that our public spaces are in fact welcoming towards cyclists? Which is an increasingly salient point, considering the fact that we are talking about this in an age of us trying to encourage more public transportation, saying micromobility is part and parcel of that conversation. So, if you want to weigh in, those numbers, you can call us 7733 2900. You can send us a voice note or send us a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. And of course, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio.
Begin fun moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:38. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, Sharmila and Sharad. We started off our show today by, spinning off from a headline surrounding two separate bike commuters who experienced being unable to find a legal place to actually put their bikes because those legal places for them were taken up by motorcyclists. So they had to instead lock their bikes somewhere else, and then it turns out that was illegal, and then their bikes got impounded and they had a whale of a time essentially trying to get their bicycles returned. So I think that had us thinking, all right, so that's a starting point. Broadly speaking, are our cities friendly for bikes? And that's what we've been asking you. What do you think? Do you cycle in the city? Do you think that our public spaces are welcoming towards cyclists? That number to call is 7733 2900. You can send a voice note to 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
We have a number of people bringing up weather, actually. So Tana says, I think it's not in our culture. And of course, the weather is a big problem. Sweat, sweat, sweat. Our infrastructure for cycling sucks. Meanwhile, a Malaysia rabbit owner says, I used to cycle to work, stopped because the weather's really just too humid. Jun Xiao, meanwhile, says, when I first moved here, I thought the weather was really nice for cycling. I even explored the areas between my home to the office and found a shortcut. But when I told my colleagues about my plan to ride a bike to the office, they all thought I was crazy. They told me that there are crazy motorcycle and car drivers everywhere, there are no bicycle lanes in most of the places, and no place to hide when it rains. So in the end, they successfully persuaded me to buy a car. I feel like I'm lucky. Otherwise, I might not survive riding a bicycle here to commute.
You know, Junsia, I had the same response when I tell people I don't own a car and I don't drive in the city. Like, how, not only was it a crazy option, but how did you survive is usually the feedback, right? The question is, actually, it's possible. It might not be desirable, and for many people it isn't, clearly. So, but it's possible, and I think that is where I'm coming from. Is it possible for us to think about this and invest enough so that the person who is the kind of inveterate pedestrian is given options, that he's part, or he or she is part of the design of the city?
So what strikes me, Jun Xiao, about your message is that you were talked out of cycling, you know, which is, I think, very emblematic of what we're trying to get at today, because it's not just how you feel. Through your message, we get insight into how the people in your life feel. And generally speaking, it wouldn't appear that anybody thinks that cycling is a, maybe not valid, but cycling is not a safe option. And that point about safety is also recurring quite a bit. For example, we do have this that came in from HK, who says, growing up in a small town, I cycled to tuition classes and so on. I basically shared the road with other vehicles, no bicycle lanes whatsoever. Yet it was safe enough for most young cyclists like me. Nowadays, traffic volume has increased so much that I would not recommend parents to let their children cycle on the roads. Even in small towns, it has become hazardous. What more can we hope for in the cities?
Absolutely right. I mean, I worry about it too. I look at what is available. Remember, I spoke about this experience of going on those beam scooters?
Yes, yes. Mm.
And I was terrified. I confess, I was terrified by the amount of traffic. And it probably took as long as I did to get that short distance because I kept stopping at every intersection, unsure about, you know, my ability to accelerate across the street. But there is so much, and it's because we have become cities where the car is central. Motorbikes too, but cars are central to the way cities are designed. And everything else is low down the list of priorities. The question is, okay, that's given. Can we change and how would it look and what do people at Prasarana or the MRT or whatever have to do to help incentivize these changes?
Don't you think it's also driver behavior, to be honest? Most of us aren't accustomed to driving with cyclists on the road. So there is an accepted code of conduct for how we're supposed to manage ourselves with other cars. There's an accepted code of conduct for how we're supposed to manage ourselves with motorcyclists, although that is increasingly tenuous, that agreement that we both are supposed to have with, you know, we technically know cars, motorcyclists, pedestrians. We understand what we're supposed to do in each of those instances. Cyclists are tough. When there are bicycle lanes, you know, of course, you stay off it if you can. I will say that on some roads, the bicycle lanes eat so far into the main road that I don't actually understand how the city council thought that that was sharing. But in other instances, I think we're just not used to it. And we see this happen even in countries or cities, big cities, in which cycling is central to how people get around. So Amsterdam's brought up a lot, London's brought up a lot, New York City, some people talk about. And in all those instances, you do hear of people, of cyclists actually, going through grievous injury or death because of encounters with people who didn't know cycling lane etiquette. So I think that a part of it also is how we think about conducting ourselves.
Well, cycling lane etiquette can only really become a thing and something that drivers keep in mind if cycling lanes and the notion of cyclists was something that was easily had, right? And the problem is that most of our roads are not really equipped for cyclists to comfortably ride alongside larger vehicles. We have actually Shariza saying, I do cycle to work, but the connectivity is very limited. The biggest obstacle is the large highway that divides districts and places.
I like your talk about the kind of ethics or compact that there is between different users of roads and the idea of sharing. It is essential, and I find that over the years that I find that pedestrians and cyclists don't get seen in many ways by cars. And motorcyclists are also often to be blamed, right? They take over spaces they're not supposed to take over. But this idea that a person, you know, not shielded by metal, has to give way to a car, that, you know, that everybody in a car is in such a rush. And I take cars, meaning I take a taxi and it gets me places. I'm in a car. But the inability to give way, right, is about the hierarchy.
Well, that, and to Shariza's point, that hierarchy extends to town planning, clearly,
yes,
to development.
Yes.
Because it's one thing for our personal compact as a society with each other, but it's quite another thing when even the city is saying to cyclists and pedestrians, actually, we don't care if you can't cross this road.
So that's what I'm saying. I mean, sure, drivers need to be more aware. But if the entire infrastructure that you've been trained to drive under doesn't prioritize cyclists, what's the incentive?
We've also got a voice note, I believe, that has come in. Here we go.
Hi, hello everyone. I'm Noh from KL. As for the today's issue regarding whether cyclists are welcome, I mean, whether it's welcome in the city or not, for me, you see, even the motorcycle, also we couldn't handle their sudden appearance. Sudden cut and chase here and there. So imagine if we add on bicycle into the list. I don't think it will end well. Even so, now also there have been cases where bicycle are using intercity highways, the federal road, and so on. And in fact, even if they use the normal road, let's say in Putrajaya, also resulting in death, like recent cases last year. So I don't think. And besides, they are very scarce for the bicycle route. I mean, we are still very far from advanced countries like Denmark, Norway, where they have dedicated road or lane throughout all the intercity roads designed specifically for the cyclists to use. Whereas for our infrastructure, we are still far from that point. So yeah, I disagree with the motion.
No, thank you for that. So I guess my question is then how?
Build it and they'll come, la? It seems to be what a lot of them are saying, that as much as we want to talk about user behavior, actually, until we put the infrastructure in place,
but they will never build it.
That's the thing. If there isn't a push from people to say we need it, then they are not going to build it.
Right. I wonder, there's also a question of how we tell the history of our cities and who used to be king of the road, right? And if you go to different parts of Asia today, you will see much more competition as to who should be dominant on the road. I remember going to Vietnam at a time when Vietnam's affluence meant that bicycles were superseded by motorcycles, but motorcycles were now going to have to make way for cars. That has been the history. The question for all these countries that are constantly being quoted is that they reversed it. They went back and found something.
Because driving cars became prohibitively expensive and difficult.
Well, that may be.
So it's taxing the cars, introducing tolls, petrol being expensive, all of which meant people wanted a more cost-efficient way to get around.
So a few people making this point, or making points that circle it, because Hazika says, my late grandfather cycled everywhere, so did my uncles, aunts, parents. The car was a luxury. They stopped cycling because the town became more developed. Again, the story that we keep hearing, and the roads became too dangerous. Legion, meanwhile, says, 30 years ago, bicyclists were kings of the road in China. Cars and lorries even had to make way for them. But after China became affluent, cyclists were gradually pushed out and the roads were taken over by motor vehicles, which I think speak to this notion of the car as a status symbol and what it means for us to, as you are rightly pointing out, Sharmila, disincentivize car owning by making it too affluent for most.
Yeah, and this is, I'm glad actually we've been circling this point about status symbol as well, because as you said, Sharad, cycling wasn't really the purview of the middle to upper class, right? It was meant to be a cheap way to get around. But then that means that as you face upward mobility in a society, it becomes increasingly necessary to own a car, not just for transport, but to say, I've made it. Now, how do you convince that same group of people to go back to a bicycle?
Because then you have bicycles that cost 40,000 ringgit. And, you know, and so there are two types of cyclists, right, who've emerged. And these are the leisure cyclists, the cyclists that actually mark not the working class as it might have been in the 70s in Beijing. And thanks, Legion, for reminding us of that history. But it's, the cyclist that actually comes from the T20 or the T1 or whatever. And so now we're saying, well, bicycles are associated with affluent class or a segment of society, we need to give them space. It's quite a bizarre move, because it's not a movement back towards thinking about what the vast majority of people need in terms of their mobility. It's about saying, well, they have money and they have cachet, and therefore we now have to make them visible and give them space. I'm not against it. I'm just saying it's a curious pattern that's emerging.
We'll return for more of this. We're talking today about whether or not our public spaces, our cities specifically, are friendly towards bicycles. Let us know, do you cycle in the city? Do you think that our public spaces are in fact welcoming towards cyclists? You can call 7733 2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Behind Famous Men. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It's 5:55. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, Sharmila and Sharad. And we've been spending this hour talking about whether or not we can cycle, really, in the city, whether you can actually commute via bicycle, if that's just not possible right now. And we want to know, do you cycle in the city? Do you think that our public spaces are in fact welcoming towards cyclists? Call us, 7733-2900. Send a voice note or WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
So we have a number of people talking about cyclist behaviour, actually. So MZ says, I was once driving along the road in front of Summit USJ and a cyclist was trying to ride from left to right at the spot where vehicles come in from Casas. Subang traffic heading to a fork separating lanes to NPE and Federal Highway. She couldn't care less for causing a massive jam due to the vehicles having to slow down to give way to her. Before we talk about enabling bikes in cities, can we start with the entitled mindset of some cyclists? Meezy, meanwhile, says, I've seen quite a number of people riding their bikes against traffic. It's rather common in the areas around factories, wet markets, petrol kiosks. As a car motorist, I'm equally scared of these cyclists, the delivery motorcycles and road bullies. Great Malaysian traffic conditions, what? The Transport Ministry needs to do a whole lot more to improve things.
Two things, right? So one is now we're looking at cyclists as entitled. I think this is a bit rich coming from somebody who drives a car. I mean, it seems to me that just by sheer numbers, this would not be true. It'd be more like car drivers have an entitled mindset. The other thing about that Meezy brings up, and which is about who's on bikes now, who's on the bicycle now? So you have the rich and affluent entitled, and then you have a particular segment of the working class, right? So it's interesting that foreign workers have come or emerge as bicycle users. Very interesting. And I'm sure they would rather be on a motorcycle if they could afford it and then move on to cars, whatever. I'm not saying that they somehow, embody a kind of primal urge to be close to the nature and therefore ride bicycles. But the prejudice, I think, works both ways. In both these instances, the idea is the cyclist is somehow this odd, out of place creature in our cities.
I think maybe we have very clear examples of the hierarchy you were talking about, Sharad, because MZ, I mean, I take the point and I know exactly where you're talking about. I can absolutely see that someone like that would be in a very dangerous spot. And I think we all feel very triggered, frankly, when we worry that someone has put themselves in a dangerous spot and now you are in danger of endangering them. And I think that's often where the reaction comes from. In this case, though, I'm sorry, but if we were to say that we have to make sure that there are no entitled cyclists before we can make things safer for them. None of us can drive law, frankly, because, if we were to wait till the last driver stopped being entitled, there wouldn't be roads. So I think we have to start somewhere.
That's true. And I also wonder how much of this is because the infrastructure doesn't exist. So cyclists go somewhere and then they realize, well, what am I supposed to do now? How do I get to the other side of the road, for instance?
Well, okay. Do we have time? We have time. Azami says, I think the radius matters. If the distances we have to travel for work, meetings, e-trees, etc. are outside of the practicality of using a bike, what use is bike domination, which I don't think we were talking about. But Azami goes on to say, if the bike is just used like single-use plastic, for example, to go to and from work, better keep it for weekend activities.
I don't know what to say about that, but you're absolutely right. There is an issue around radius and therefore, when people start to talk about a better kind of city and city living, they are talking about those distances. And when maybe we can actually organize it, maybe the bike will then come into its own.
So that has been our show for this hour. We're talking today about whether or not our public spaces, our city specifically, are friendly towards bicycles. Let us know, do you cycle in the city? Do you think that our public spaces are in fact welcoming towards cyclists? That number to call, 7733-2900. Send us a voice note, 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.